everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, here to share empowering ideas and insights. One of the things we're going to talk about today is how an herb, it is called turmeric, and from that herb we get a specific nutrient, it's called curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. You're going to find out how at the Hunan University of Chinese Medicine, they found it can help diabetic kidney disease patients. We have a lot of those in the United States and throughout the world. That's good news. But there's a lot more of good news on living a longer, healthier life. Then I'm going to do a classroom on the air, as promised. And today we're going to take a look at a beginner's guide to becoming a healthy vegan. Now, a lot of you are vegan or vegetarian. It doesn't mean that, however, that you are a healthy vegan or vegetarian. And for those of you who have no idea about making this change, you'll have plenty of insight as well. I'll dispel a lot of the myths and help you take a step-by-step approach towards a healthier, longer life. Also today, we're going to hear about a larger issue that is strongly put by scientists, philosophers, ethicists in our society. What is more important than the coronavirus or its variants? And that is, what happens to our rights and freedoms when we'll do anything to protect our health from becoming a victim of the virus? But what if, in proper and independently, scientifically legitimate terms, that the virus was not as bad at this point, and for most people, as the government is insisting that it is? You would think that nothing else matters, and as a result, that has spread a sense of dread throughout the entire American population, vaccinated, unvaccinated, double vaccinated, vaccinated with boosters. I just spoke with a person yesterday when I was out doing some shopping, and the person had two vaccines, a booster, is now getting a second booster. That's four vaccines within 10 months. When I asked why, this person was about, I'm guessing, 40 years old, thin, seemed to be healthy, and all because, you know, the government says so. Well, what if the government is wrong? So we're going to take a look at a more philosophical approach, not just to COVID, but to all the problems we're facing. 5G is great. You should have it. We need it. We need to be connected to the internet of all things. Wrong. But you would know that from the New York Times. It is sponsoring 5G or all the telecom companies and all the major players that benefit from it. How do we get to where we accept something without any fact-checking, real fact-checking, our own, and even not trust the fact-checkers that now we're finding out, like Johnson & Johnson is a drug maker and also a vaccine supplier, and the Robert Wood Johnson, that's Johnson & Johnson, has $2 billion in stock that it owns. Well, how objective can it be if it's funding a fact-checking on the vaccine safety and efficacy? The conflict of interest, the gross bias that could be there is palpable, and yet no one would have known unless we did the homework to find out who the fact-checkers are. We're fact-checking the fact-checkers, and virtually all of them are biased or front groups for the polluters and the drug dispensers. So we're going to have that discussion. Also today, we're taking a look at Pfizer. I'm not taking a look. A group of investigators have gotten together, and they just looked at their history. Now, I wrote about this, and it's on GaryKnoll.com. It's worth downloading it to look at the real reputation, a history of how they've engaged in malfeasance and deception and lies. That is true for almost all these manufacturers. Yet never once, when they come before Congress, never once when they're interviewed on these talk shows, is any of their background and history shared with us so that we could pause for a moment and say, well, hold on. You've paid billions of dollars in fines. You've been found to pay thousands of doctors tens of millions of dollars to recommend or use your product. So why should we trust that suddenly, in your whole history, you're deciding to be honest about the vaccines? It would be an extremely naive person who wouldn't say that we should be examining that. So we are. So we have a lot to share, and we begin. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, there was a study. Now, this was a randomized trial, and it concluded that curcumin supplementation was associated with a substantial improved creatine, that's, by the way, a marker of kidney function, cholesterol, glucose, and systolic blood pressure compared to a placebo in men and women with diabetic kidney disease. We're talking about millions of people. And that, by the way, is a frequent complication of diabetes. And it was published in the current issue of Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Separately, cardiovascular disease risk is boosted by stress. Now, we're all stressed in different ways for different reasons. Some is temporary stress. We'll get through it. We got a problem. The IRS audits us. Whatever it is, we got bills to pay and we don't have the money to pay them. I'm trying to help someone right now who's being evicted from their home, who's lived there for a long time. The new owners of the home want this person out. This person doesn't know where to go, doesn't have the resources to get there. But there's stress, lots of it. We'll work through it. We'll find a solution. That's what we do for friends and family and to the general public. You know, we reach out, work together. But then there's the chronic stress, the stress of a sense of foreboding, a sense of unease, a sense that things are not all right. Think of right now the professors teaching who historically had a fun classroom. They offered challenging intellectual discussions and debates. They brought in guest speakers. They showed films that would inspire or stimulate thought. And the students, the learners, were happy to embrace this because it was part of the testing ground. Learn how to develop coping skills. Learn how to think deeper here in the protection of this classroom before you go into the real world. Now, having been in academia for 45 years as an instructor, teacher, adjunct professor, Fredley Dickinson, Pratt Institute, School of Visual Arts, etc., I can tell you that it's a completely different atmosphere. Now, there are exceptions, of course, but by and large, what has happened is that the woke culture, the identity politics culture, the white fragility culture has infiltrated a lot of these. And now the professors, knowing better, who normally would challenge some of these foolish, immature, and absolutely destructive and racist doctrines produced by the anti-racist, who are the ultimate racist in this case, they're silent. They're afraid. You'll hear one coming up next week who will tell you that this person no longer brings guest speakers, no longer shows videos, no longer kind of has a fun classroom. No, it's minimal what happens because he doesn't want to put himself in jeopardy of getting a Title IX act by some anonymous student, that then you could lose your job, your tenureship, you could lose everything, including your reputation. That's what's out there. Now imagine the stress that that creates every day. Did I say something inappropriate? Did I use the wrong pronoun? When we make the use of a pronoun more important than anything else in the world, anything else in life, nothing else matters, then you know how far we've come from reality. Everything is important in measure. But let's look at global warming. Let's look at the famine in Yemen. Let's look at the civil wars around the world. Let's look at the people we left behind in Afghanistan, including American citizens, by the thousands and tens of thousands of people that work with us. And all that was left on computers with all their biometric material, what they worked, they did, how important they were to the American cause, how much they were paid, where they lived, who their relatives were, where they lived. So now where does a person go? They can't get out of the country. And yet they'll be caught. They'll be punished. Many will be beheaded, as already happened, and others rounded up, put into a square, and shot, already happened. And yet you wouldn't know this in the mainstream media. You would know it from the official authorities because it goes against their agenda of success. Imagine the stress that that creates. So you see, we all have stress. But understand this. We should deal with our stress in a constructive, positive manner. Otherwise, you risk dying of a heart attack or some other form of cardiovascular disease because of the increased burden of perceived stress, whether it's financial problems or adverse life events. A major international study with the University of Gothenburg, that's important, that's in Sweden, researchers found that your ability to deal with stress appropriately was linked directly with preventing or increasing heart attack and stroke. The more stress, the greater the risk to your heart. Wow. This was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Network Open. 118,706 individuals in 21 countries were involved. So stress kills. We've got to learn how to deal with it. A new study suggests the health benefits of swapping animal proteins for plant proteins. Now, this leads me in, after this, to a commentary, a classroom on the air. This study at Michael's Hospital, substituting 1 to 2 servings of animal protein with plant protein every day, could lead to a small reduction in the 3 main cholesterol markers for cardiovascular disease prevention. The health benefits could even be greater for people combining plant proteins with other cholesterol-lowering foods, like your water-soluble fibers from oats, barley, psyllium, and plant sterols. That's according to them. This was a meta-analysis of 112 different randomized controlled trials in which people substituted plant proteins for some animal proteins or with animal proteins in their diets for 3 weeks. The results were published in the Journal of the American Heart Association. On one other thing, blueberry vinegar, which very few people ever use, gourmet chefs will, improves memory in this mice model with amnesia. This is Kangkuk University in South Korea. And if you don't have, and this was published in the ACS Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry, blueberry vinegar, it's just blueberries and vinegar, they found that the fermented product could restore cognitive function in mice. So isn't that important that you try some as well? It's a very tasty salad dressing, by the way. It's salt-free and gives you a kind of a salty flavor. Just important to know. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start on protein. Protein is the building blocks of our body. We have different amino acids. Now, we've been led to believe for the last almost 100 years from an early study on mice that you need 8 essential amino acids. Essential meaning your body cannot produce them. They're exogenous, meaning you have to get them from outside yourself. Okay, fair enough. So then, when you get these, let's say you have for breakfast, like a lot of people, you'll have eggs, that's protein, high quality protein, highly usable. And then you'll have bacon or sausage, both of which are pork and different, cut in different ways, cured in different ways. You'll have some kind of bread. Generally, it's a white bread that a person toasts and then puts butter on it or margarine. And then they'll have a cup of coffee or milk. And that's considered a good breakfast. Now, there's an English breakfast that is about double that amount of selection of food. Heavy, heavy, heavy on the animal proteins because they'll frequently have sausage and bacon and eggs and fried potatoes, hash browns. And they have this kind of a marmalade that's really terrible tasting, in my opinion. But other people love it. That's fine. It's a very acquired taste. I tried it when I was in England. And man, it just made me gag. But they'll have it, again, on a toast, and they'll have it frequently with coffee or tea. And it's filling. If you've seen an English breakfast, it's big. And a Scottish breakfast, I've been to Scotland, need to say, and they'll take oatmeal, which in and of itself is healthy, still cut oats, but they put a lot of butter in it, which is not healthy, and then they'll put cream in it, and then they'll put sugar in it, and stir all that up, and they eat a big bowl of that, and they also put a lot of salt in it. Why they put, hey, I grew up where they put salt on watermelon. Do you, any of you remember doing that? Yeah. Wasn't a smart thing to do, but it was an acquired taste. But they put a lot of salt in it. I remember ordering oatmeal in a hotel I was staying at while I was visiting the Scottish Highlands, and it was a little place. And I said, do you have something that you make that is natural, that's vegan? I'm a vegan. Oh, yeah. And so normally that means using apple juice instead of cream. And I saw that they had a little container of honey. But this thing came, and I looked at it, and I said, this doesn't look right. I took a little tiny piece, and it was salty. And then I saw the cream. And so I said, can I just make it just with water and the oatmeal? They were nice people, not a problem. But they're eating that every day. Then you start looking at the amount of disease they have. And that's just typical of a very high-fat, animal-based diet. And you find that a lot of places in the world. But you don't find it in a lot of places in Africa, where the local population will eat millet and gourds and root vegetables. They may have occasionally, ceremonies more often than not, some form of animal protein, but they're poor and they can't afford it. So they have what they can. So radishes are common. Different types of lettuces are common. Depends upon where they're located and whether they have shade to grow it, water to grow it. But in any case, they tend, as long as they're not eating processed foods, to be rather healthy and live long lives, all things considered. And I got that directly from Dr. Burkitt. In one trip to Great Britain, I interviewed Dr. Burkitt of Burkitt's lymphoma. He worked at 67 East African hospitals, and he said that it was rare to see someone with appendicitis. He never saw anyone with colorectal cancer, rare to have a heart attack or stroke. And he said when he looked at their diet, he found that they ate a lot of roughage, things that we couldn't tolerate. They didn't have the refined barley. They had the pearl barley. They had the regular barley. Their grains weren't, they weren't processed. So if they had rice, they had the whole rice. And their bread that they ate was frequently a flat bread and very thick, but it was a healthier bread. So it's the fiber he attributes their health to, because they had he averaged about 50 grams a day of fiber. And he wrote about it. And he said that they tend to be lean and could walk for 5 or 10 miles without a problem. Now, then you go to South America, and I've been to South America, the rainforest, all over the place. And I'm always going to study the habits of people who live there. I want to be there. I want to sit with them and see what they're eating and why and how, where did it come from and how old are they and how strong they are. As just one example, when I was in the rainforest, Brazil, I was seeing that there was a lot of sun that came through the canopy, and we were all getting burned. So this older gentleman said, not a problem, there's something will help you that we use. He sang that through a translator. And this man climbed, I'm guessing, a 50-foot, more or less, coconut tree. And he threw down green coconuts, cut them open. There was a gel inside. I'd never looked inside of an immature coconut. And he took out this gel, and we smeared it all over our body. And sure enough, that took away the burn. And then someone else had a problem with digestion. They'd eaten something he shouldn't have. And so he said, eat this also, because it helps with parasites, worms, nuts up stomach. It worked. When I asked how old was the man, and mind you, this is around 1972, 73, he was 72 years of age. He looked 30. His body was just ripped. And he was just healthy and happy. When he smiled, he had perfect teeth. And then I saw his diet. They did eat fish that they would catch, but most, 90% of their diet was from plants. And they knew which plants were safe to eat, which were not, which fruits to eat, which not. And they would have whole bowls of fruit, whole bowls of vegetables that they would eat. And so when you travel around the world, and you see people and you see their diet, and then you see the consequence of that diet, it makes a difference. So I grew up, and I'm sure many of you grew up, where your mother, more often than not, wanted to do the right thing. So they made sure that you had meat 3 times a day, dairy 2x a day. Some form of carbohydrate, generally either a potato, a white potato, or bread, every meal. And that was supposed to be the right diet. It wasn't. It was a purely propagandized, completely manipulated diet by the people who had a lot of money invested in we eating the chicken, and then the fried chicken, and then the pizzas, and the roast beef, and the people are making hundreds of billions of dollars a year controlling what you eat. That meant that they also controlled the science. Because there's, I still have them, full-page ads in the American Journal of Dietetics. Now, I'm a registered dietitian. I graduated number one in my class in dietetics. And I can tell you that what we were taught, a lot of it, not all of it, a lot of it was misinformation. And so that's why in 1 year, 55,000 Americans died of malnutrition in hospitals they got from eating hospital food. Now, you would think that the doctor who prescribes the diet and the dietitian who fulfills the diet would know better. But being in the classes and being in the workshops and then being in the apprenticing program for 900 hours, you start to see, wow, they think that the amount of sugar in an apple and the amount of sugar in a tablespoon of white sucrose is the same in the body. I would have professors tell me this, and I would argue the opposite. But unless you had something to rebut them that was in the peer-reviewed journal, they wouldn't hear of it. But there was good science. Now, years later, we find out it was the sugar causing the problem, not the fat. Fat was a different problem. But then the sugar people controlled the science and got scientists and doctors to write positive articles about sugar and negative articles to blame our obesity epidemic and diseases on fat. That was exposed, I guess, about 10 years ago, and then again about 5 years ago. But it's been there all along. So just understand something. Whatever you're eating that you like and are comfortable with that makes you feel good, more often than not, that's bad for you. Because food isn't meant to make you feel good. It's meant to be good. The things that make us feel good are that chocolate cake, that big mousse, the parfait, the cookies, the pizzas, the coffee, everything that we like that gives us a certain feeling, the caffeine rush, the wokeness of our suddenly drink the coffee and you're awake. Ask anyone that flies where they have to a long flight, how much coffee they consume, truck drivers, how many people work night shifts, how much coffee, when people are under stress, how much coffee. This is all important. Why? Because it's displacing something your body actually needs and should be able to produce from the material you take in. So if you took in the right amount of nuts and seeds, which have all 8 essential amino acids, that thing gives you the building blocks for the muscles you need. I mean, they say, well, I don't want to be puny. Go back and look on my site at when I was 18, 19 years old, 238 pounds, all muscle, tiny little waist, strong as an ox. Now, when I got to New York, I stopped bodybuilding and powerlifting, and I started running long distance. I dropped down. I thought I was skinny at 190, and I was really emaciated at 180 because of how I'd looked before. And I wasn't eating any animal protein, but I was still consuming, until I got to New York, dairy, thinking, well, dairy doesn't cause the animal to die, and it's good. Because that was the myth of all the bodybuilders and all the weightlifters. Paul Anderson, you got to have that non-fat dry milk in you. You got to have the high proteins. We had massive amounts of protein. We have far too much protein. I hate to think of how many athletes' kidneys and livers were poisoned, careers cut short because of excess protein. So we've had too much protein in the American diet. So just imagine this. How much animal protein would you actually need at a meal to fulfill the body's requirements at that meal? Well, it's simple. 28.35 grams to an ounce. All right, so let's just say that you have 3 ounces. Right, 3 ounces. All right, that's a nice size forkful of food. All right, that's 28. Now, those 28 grams, let's just say half of that, argument's sake, is protein. So let's just round it off, make it real simple. Let's just say that it's 14 grams of protein from 1 ounce. And let's just say it's around 40, more or less 43 grams of protein in one big bite. That's more than your body needs for 2 meals. That's 2/3 of your entire day supply of protein, and you just had it in one fork. And there's no way to store protein in the body. It's not stored in the muscles. It goes through a process called deaminization, where it's then broken down. And the byproducts are ammonia, not good for your brain, causing brain fog, and not good for your kidneys, and urea, really bad for your kidneys and your liver. So now you're taxing the two filtration organs of the body, the kidney and the liver, and you're adversely affecting the bloodstream and the brain. All for something you didn't need to begin with. Now, this is something I know a lot about because I was the scientist who discovered this. And I wrote up the paper called The Egg Project. It was done with Dr. Hildred Fitzke and Dr. Berman and others who duplicated my work, and we worked for almost a year on this. And then when nobody would publish it, and I sent it to every major scientific journal. I sent it to 7,000 journals. I sent it to the USDA, the FDA. I sent it to Harvard, MIT's nutrition department. Not a single person responded to it because it showed that no one has to have any animal protein at all. No dairy, no eggs, no beef, pork, chicken, veal, fish, nothing from an animal in order to be healthy. To the contrary, you're less likely to be healthy if you have any of that. In fact, you're almost guaranteed to increase your risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer, ovarian cancer, when you have those animal proteins. And of course, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity are going to come with it because there's lots of calories in that. And so it took 12 years to publish that in a peer-reviewed journal. But I held a press conference, and I'll bet some of you were at that press conference. By the way, if any of you were at that press conference at RFK Junior High School, and it was an all-afternoon press conference on the Egg Project for this major discovery, call in at 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your response, what you learned that day, and how did that change your diet? Because now there's a process that we can give up the animal protein, but I'm not going to suggest for most people, don't give it up all cold turkey. Because you're craving, your brain actually gets dopamine hits. You feel better when you eat something that you're addicted to that's bad for you. Why do you think heroin addicts and methamphetamine addicts and coke addicts, they feel good after, for a period of time, after they consume that drug? It's terrible for them, and then they go through withdrawal. Well, what happens when you start getting a migraine headache when you're off caffeine? Or you start getting hypoglycemic reactions when you're off sugar? So you run to that sugar break. Remember, we call it the coffee break at about 10 o'clock in the morning and again in the mid-afternoon because we haven't eaten the right things to stabilize our blood sugar. So just that's the broader outline that we're going to deconstruct all the myths about this. So what have we learned? A, around the world, some of the healthiest people have the least amount of animal protein. That includes people subscribing to the Mediterranean diet. And also to the Japanese diet and to the Hunza Cut diet and many of the diets of people in Africa, South America, and in India in particular, where they tend to be the people as a group tend to be vegetarian. They do have dairy and ghee, etc. But you look at them, many of them are very thin unless they're eating the American diet, lots of sugar, and then they're obese. And there are a lot of people living long lives on a healthy diet. So you increase your risk of all diseases, major diseases, when you are eating a plant-based diet, and you help cleanse the body because of all the high fibers and phytonutrients, hundreds in each vegetable and fruit, when you eat a healthy diet. I'm going to mention details on our next program. I'm sharing this piece by piece, not to overwhelm. Now we're going to hear from Elizabeth, who's been taking calls. And by the way, you can go to our number and or go to prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com, and leave us a type message, and she'll read it. So I'm going to listen now, and Jesse's going to play Elizabeth's question from someone in the audience. Jesse, let's hear what Elizabeth has to say.
Gary, here's a question that came in from a listener who says, I first saw you when in 1975, as a 15-year-old kid, my mother and father brought me to your first ever running and walking club meeting. It was on the boardwalk in Brooklyn. It was jammed with thousands of your WMCA listeners. I still have the running shirt you gave out to everyone who showed up. My mother and father ran 5 marathons with you. In 1985, I also ran one, and it was a hoot. Then my father and mother moved to Washington for his work, and I moved to Atlanta. I lost touch with you till about 1998 when I watched you on the local PBS station. You were funny and upbeat and then played that program every week for nearly a year. I watched an additional 20 or more of your PBS Atlanta programs. In 2020, I began listening to your noon program over the internet. COVID set me back in my health. Sorry, but I've not been living a healthy lifestyle for the past 30 years. Now I'm 50 pounds overweight with high blood pressure, very high blood sugar, and everything aches. About 2 weeks ago, I heard you mention that you feed your animals better than most people feed themselves. I went to your website to see what you're feeding them, and wow, you look the same. I immediately sent the photos to my mum and dad. They got a big kick out of seeing them. They too stopped training and racing and being healthy. Now we're asking what went wrong. Any inspiring words to get us back on the healthy path would be much appreciated.
Okay, well, it's nice to reconnect with someone. Now think back, any of you who've done marathons with us, and that's about 32,000 people over the decades, how much fun it was once you realized you could do it. You know, at a certain point in your training, about 3 months in, you no longer had all the aches and pains and shin splints, no longer had the fatigue. You didn't have to go to a massage therapist that afternoon or take a hot bath with Epsom salts because your body was able to recover quickly, because you learned how to compensate. And after that, it was fun. So for us to do any marathon, and we did, wow, think of all the original first marathons we did. I did the second or third New York City Marathon, but the first Waterfront Marathon, and then the London Marathon, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Jamaica, won a gold in that one, as did Sam Skinner. The Long Island Marathon, Waterfront Marathon, New Jersey Shore Marathon, the Montreal Marathon, those were all the first marathons in those cities. It was so exciting. It was something that we had prepared for. We stayed in shape year-round. That was a key. It's the person that's like an athlete that's great in season, then just goes off the wagon and eats and drinks and doesn't exercise and then has to come back to camp and get back in shape. Now, look at someone that stays in shape all year-round. That's the athlete that's going to have a longer career. The same is true for getting back into shape. You know what you have to do. Simply repeat what you did, the parents, to do 5 marathons and you to do 1. Nothing has changed. It's still the same. You build up slowly, not fast. Get a good cardiovascular stress test because you're older now. Make sure your heart can handle it. Make sure you know what your resting pulse is. Make sure that you're not in any arrhythmia problems. Check to see what your fibrinogen, C-reactive protein, and homocysteine, that's going to go up when you're not exercising, you're stressed, and you're overweight. That's the silent killer. That's the thing that when it's elevated up there around 15, 16, 17, 18, boom, drop dead of heart attack. We don't want that happening. But once you have your blood work up done and your impedance test, what percentage of your body is fat, What is lean muscle? What is water? Then we can start to work. And you must do it slowly. Don't go faster than what the body can adapt to. You'll lose the weight, and that's because you're going to be increasing your metabolism. And you're also going to lose weight if you juice. Start with 3 fresh glasses of celery, cucumber, ginger, and lemon juice per day. You can put green apple in there also, but you got to have 3 a day. That acts as a natural diuretic, and that'll help flush out a lot of the excess water in the body. And you're probably holding a lot of excess water. You also want to cleanse the intestine. People have no idea. They could be holding 5, 10, 12 pounds of impacted fecal matter in their intestines if they've been on a low fiber, high animal protein diet. Because it's, remember, when you're on a healthy plant-based diet, visualize yourself driving at the speed limit 70 miles an hour down a highway with no traffic. Now visualize you're on a meat-based diet with refined carbohydrates, lots of sugar, and not enough water. Now you're going 5 miles an hour. That's what it's like. So how you get rid of that is you start to consume high-fiber foods, soft fibers like blueberries, raspberries, mulberries. Also, blackberries and black currants, goji berries, those are all good for eliminating constipation. But so too is a tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil and about 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C twice a day. That's really good for you, and it cleanses the intestine. At some point, you may want to get yourself an ozonated colonic by a colonic specialist who knows what they're doing and licensed. That'll help as well. You don't need a lot, just 1, maybe 2. And then get yourself into a training regimen. Now, because of technology, you can do it at home in front of that mirror they have. And by the way, a friend of mine invented the most popular at home exercise in the country. And he's a very shy guy. I didn't even know it. He just thought, going over the internet, there's an ad, and I invented that. Oh, good for you. Nice royalties you're getting. But we now don't have to go outside and go to a health club to find ways of working with people who instruct us. And most of the programs are pretty good. So now you got no excuse not to. All right? So that's what you do. You're going to have to learn. I don't have the book. It's no longer in print, Ultimate Training. But the information is still out there on the internet. I did some articles on it. What are the nutrients your body needs when you're starting to exercise the heart and blood pressure? Because you don't want that blood pressure to spike. You want to go easy. You want to get rid of all the salt in the diet and get your natural sodium from natural sodium-rich foods. You also want to get acupuncture. It is my experience, the single best thing to bring down blood pressure and help your heart is acupuncture, 3 days a week for 12 weeks. I've helped so many people with high blood pressure, mainly from stress. Then you want to make sure you get your coenzyme Q10, ubiquinone. You want to get vitamin E. These are twice a day, 1 in the morning before you exercise, 1 in the evening before you go to bed. And vitamin C, cayenne in a capsule, high heat unit. If you have a little trouble with it, and some people do, then you might want to take it in a little smoothie to buffer it. You also might want to take some black cumin seed oil after your workout in the morning by itself. Again, take it with a smoothie. It's easier to tolerate. Then make sure that you're getting quercetin, generally about 1,000 milligrams, and twice a day, and curcumin, because as you're beginning to work your muscles, you're going to find some aches and pains. So that is your morning regimen, plus magnesium at about 800 and calcium 800 milligrams. That's protecting your heart muscle. It's protecting your blood pressure. So that's compensating. And remember what I used to share every Sunday morning at Fifth Avenue and Central Park at 90th Street? always compensate. So long workouts create free radicals. Free radicals create inflammation. So to stop the inflammation, have the antioxidants before and after workout that grab those free radicals and neutralize them. So that's how we get started. And as a film, we're going to go to a film right now. Jesse, let's show the first part, maybe 10 minutes of a film that everybody in this audience should relate with. And that is because I've learned in my career that if all I give is positive information as a solution without understanding the deeper, darker aspects of what a person's not dealing with, then they'll stop the good stuff when there's no longer someone supporting them doing it. And in life, we are the only ones who are going to be our coaches and cheerleaders throughout all of life. We have different people at different times who may or may not support us in our efforts, even to be healthy. Believe it or not, I know people, including medical doctors, nurses, professors, who listen to this program, who say that their family thinks I'm crazy, don't use any of this information, even though all my information comes from sound science, because the members of their family don't want to change their bad habits, so they get resentful when someone is no longer sharing the same bad habits. That causes contention. So, dealing with the dark side. So we're now going to go to a clip called Overcoming the Dark Side, and it'll be in about 10 segments. It's a two-hour film, and we'll watch just 10 minutes now, and in order for Jesse, for people, or Rodney, for people to be able to watch this in real time right now, they can go to progressiveradionetwork.com. You can watch this. It's worth watching. It's really interesting. Okay, now to our film.
Overcoming the dark side of our being. And it's that dark side that allows smart people to do stupid things and good people to do bad things. And then one day we wake up and where are we at? We're in trouble. We have a nation that's morbidly obese. We have children that are going to die before their parents because they're so sick. We have an epidemic of adult 2 diabetes in children. We have arthritis in children, heart disease in children. And my generation, the baby boomers, we have 85 million with problems with their memory, dementia, cognitive decline, and older individuals, senior citizens, with Alzheimer's. These are some of the problems we're facing, but then we are also facing a financial meltdown. We have been living in a bubble. People were just buying everything they could, and now the bubble has burst. For the first time since the Great Depression of the 1930s, we are literally looking at the possibility that we will be back into another full-fledged depression. The reality is that we have hit the perfect storm. And I want to know, how did we get here? I want to know why so many Americans are so frustrated with their life that they're sublimating. How are we sublimating? Gambling, drinking, buying things we don't need, creating debt, spending our time on the internet, living a passive existence in some safe little way that we don't have to any longer really communicate with people. It's all done through cyberspace. We're frustrated. Our kids are overpressured. They don't have a chance just to be a kid anymore. Everyone is trying to outperform at some level. And then think of the crisis. Think of the stress. Stress kills you. Stress can cause disease, from cancer to heart disease to a stroke and dementia. Stress can easily cause you to lose sleep, and then your immune system tumbles.
If you look at the world around us, look at the news media, look at the stories, look at the fears of the environment, the fears of viruses that are going to come and take us away, the fears of war, the fears of global climate, and you start to recognize that we are living in an environment that is steeped in fear stimuli. Well, there's only one simple response to cells in that environment. You can see it in tissue culture. The moment you live in that environment, the first thing you do is close yourself down and withdraw from the stimuli, but at the cost of you are no longer growing. And what it also leads to in the world that we have right now, not only are we not growing and sustaining our biology, but the fears also shut down our immune system. And when we shut down the immune system, then at that point, what ultimately happens is we're not growing and we're letting invasive organisms take advantage of us. And so when we're in protection, we get sicker and ultimately can die from staying in a protection posture because it prevents the growth and maintenance of our body.
And stress almost always does something that no one likes, and that is it makes you make bad choices. And almost any time you make a choice from stress, it is the wrong choice. So, take a look around. Look at our environment. We're at the 12 tipping points. Right now, no matter what we do, it's not going to stop major events from happening over the next 50 to 100 years. And many believe, as I do, that some of these events will happen in the next 5 to 10 years. In fact, it was just about 4 years ago that over 1,000 of the world's leading scientists were discussing environmental problems, and one problem was the Larsen B shelf down at Antarctica. And people said, oh, it'll be from 100 to 10,000 years before it breaks. It broke 29 days later. So we're living in chaos times. It is my belief that one of the reasons that the individual today is in such crisis on so many levels is because many of our major institutions have betrayed us. The people that we trusted to make the right choices have made choices that help them but do not help us.
In today's world, a lot of people have achieved their goals but have not really looked at the consequences of the process of achieving those goals, what happens when they do achieve these goals. Biologically, it's very interesting that we are driven by an imperative called the biological imperative, which is a built-in mechanism in all living organisms to survive. And this is the fundamental driving force of everything from bacteria all the way up to humans. And the relevance about that, then, we're on a real mission to identify what are those things that are necessary in our lives to survive. Well, it becomes an issue when we have to be programmed to identify what those things are. So when we are on our mission, we're not just coming from our own selves, we're actually coming from a history and a culture of other people providing us with programs as to what we want when we get there. So our goals are actually implanted by other people. Well, the problem with that is that goals become personalized for other people, not the same goals for you. And so we start looking at goals and we have to ask, are the goals that we have been programmed to reach in our current world, the one that we're living in now, are these the goals that life intended us to seek? And are these goals that are actually in the end good for us? Well, my understanding from a biological point of view is simply this. No, the issues of our search for goals in our world today are misplaced. That there are really fundamental goals of what is called living harmony, in the sense that we provide ourselves with an opportunity to live on this planet, but we also do so without cutting other people's opportunities to live on this planet, that we begin to recognize there's a biological reason for community, that the nature of community is life.
Think of the person that then borrows money in a hedge fund, goes out and buys commodities, and manipulate commodity prices. A guy buys a barrel of oil and shares it with this guy over here. It's all on paper. And then this guy sells it back and back and back. Do you realize that a barrel of oil could sell 20 times before you, the public, actually pay that bill? That's why it is not supply and demand that is the driving force of the increase in the price of the current commodities, be those wheat, corn, dairy, or oil, or gas. It's the individual that you will never see. You don't know a thing about them. You've never heard their name, but they're playing the market. Shouldn't we make this illegal so they can't do it? Because this winter, there are going to be individuals who cannot afford the fuel to keep their homes warm. And yet there'll be people making billions of dollars by playing the commodity market. What kind of ethic is that? Well, clearly, that's the ethic of the dark side.
Evolution is totally based on cooperation. And without that cooperation, then the whole thing will sink. And this is exactly where we are today. The concept of many people seeking for their own personal goals, their own greed, pulling out of the system, and then allowing the rest of us in the system to drop out of the picture. Unfortunately, they don't realize when we drop out of the picture, so do they.
In the 1930s and 40s, 40 million Germans supported, not all, but many of them, supported the idea of a racial cleansing and supported a war that caused tens of millions more people to die.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I'm not video streaming now because I want to take some calls. I'd like your input. So here's one of the questions I would like to ask and get your response. If you and I are judged by an individual act, and therefore our entire career, life, savings, future, everything hangs on that one thing, it may not even be a bad thing, and we can never be redeemed in the eyes of the woke culture, those in the media, and yet here are the offenders, serial offenders, and I'm just talking about the people making the vaccines that you're supposed to trust implicitly, and yet they have long, sordid careers of criminal activity, lying, manipulating. Why don't we hold the same standards of accountability towards them or Wall Street banks? Why not? Because then we wouldn't trust any of them. Wouldn't that make room for a whole new standard of viability? The precautionary principle on moral and ethical grounds, show us that we should trust you, believe you, and your product, whatever, whether it's a vaccine or pill or anything else. 888-874-4888. And I have not someone on the line, but Mike emailed us in at prnstudio@gmail.com. Mike says, question for Gary. One, is it safe for an unvaccinated person to be involved in an intimate relationship with a vaccinated person? My opinion, nope. Why? Because now we know the primary super spreaders are the vaccinated, not the unvaccinated. And therefore, when a person has been vaccinated, they're sharing far more, and they are frequently asymptomatic when they're doing it. Therefore, you wouldn't know it. And just keep that in mind. And also, what about the shedding of spike protein, graphene, magnetic nanoparticles, etc., through the air, skin, saliva, fluids, and so on? The graphene and magnetic nanoparticles, no, but the spike proteins, you bet. Because now through multiple autopsies, and we're finding that the spike protein does not stay in one place, it spreads, including past the blood-brain barrier and into the heart. That's why we're seeing so many heart attacks and strokes. Also, I hear all kinds of answers from don't shake hands, have close contact, shedding doesn't exist. Yes, it does. From respected doctors, I would lose that respect then on these issues. It's very confusing. Yes, it is. Here's my suggestion. Don't shake hands. Simply a nice nod and a smile accomplishes the same thing. Because you don't know what's in a person's body. You don't know what, if they talk loud, cough, sneeze, what's going to go into yours. Remember years ago, I said that I was walking down the street watching all these New Yorkers. And then I just, everywhere I walked, and I walked to work from the Upper West Side clear downtown to the Empire State Building area, and I would watch them hold a phone, talk right into it, where their lips were right up against that receiver. Now, no one comes around and cleans those every time someone uses them. Therefore, everything, bacteria, viruses that are in someone's saliva, which they are now ricocheting out of the mouth by the hundreds of thousands per breath onto the phone receiver, bouncing back into your mouth. So imagine if there were 1,000 people who've used your phone, some had hepatitis, herpes 6, etc., you could be getting those viruses right back into you and never know where it came from. That's why I always take a little desanitizer, little thing, I put alcohol and hydrogen peroxide, and then I have a paper towel, so if I have to, I hold one hand around the paper towel around the telephone, and I clean off, sterilize the end, and then I talk past it, not exactly on it. Little tiny tips like that. Just always realize every doorknob is contaminated. So without making it an obsession, just alcohol your doorknobs, alcohol the refrigerator, alcohol the remote control, alcohol the light switches, and most importantly, alcohol the flush handle on the toilet and the sink. Okay? That can prevent cross-contamination or rebound infection. Now, Rodney, let's see if anyone's on at 888-874-4888. All right, when they come on, I'll be happy to take them. A couple of things I want to share that might give you a... You know what we can do? We're going to have to say goodbye to our WBA audience, but without doubt, you're going to have to hear tonight's program at 7 o'clock on PRN, the Progressive Commentary Hour, because Dr. Robert Malone is going to be there talking about an issue that needs to be discussed in depth, and that's hence the whole hour. And that discussion is about what happens when we lose our capacity for critical thinking because we're stuck in a sense of fear, uncertainty, and an apprehensive attitude, a sense of foreboding. Something bad is happening. We can't always put our finger right on it, but it's happening. And this is not just about the coronavirus. It's about all the other things that are happening as well. So one of the smartest guys on the planet is going to be giving us insights that we need to hear. So that's at 7 o'clock. Keith from New York, your turn. You're on.
Yes. I would like to know, how come did you pass this information about COVID to Ron Paul? That's number one. And number two, how come the Black Caucus doesn't do anything about...
Yes. Okay. Yes, we do. We pass everything on to thousands of people. But more importantly, and this is where I want to thank you and everyone else in this audience, you're passing it on millions of times. I mean, some of these video clips that we do, you can't believe the numbers that are downloading them. And that's because someone said, other people should see this, pass it forward. So pass everything forward that you think is of value. Now go to GaryNall.com. And by the way, there's going to be a huge, huge amount of material going on there on this coming Monday. I mean, mind-boggling. Thousands of pages, all important, and I'll explain why on Monday. But right now, you have the articles. If you want to share something on health, you've got hundreds and hundreds. Something on vaccines, on their legitimacy, on Wikipedia, on the mainstream media, on D'Angelo's book on white fragility, which I consider the single most dangerous book in the world since Mein Kampf, and its consequences could be extremely deadly, not because of concentration camps, not because of detention centers, but because it's conditioning the mind to hate a group, despise a group, loathe a group, exclude a group from any sense that they're sentient beings, and you're judging them upon a false, completely mythological concept that because they're Caucasian, they are born evil and therefore should not have power, should not be trusted. That is so mind-numbingly stupid, and I've invited her and others who believe this on my program to debate them. I want you to hear them, the best argument they can give. They'll always be treated, as all my guests are, with respect. But I will then have a chance to deconstruct their arguments. So that's what we're dealing with now, all right? And we need a different mindset to be able to get out of fear and to get into looking at the truth. So you have to do the job. Ron Paul, he gets our material, but thousands of other people do as well. Separately, I cannot answer for why the Black Caucus chooses to keep itself focused upon promoting hegemonic practices around the world, the neoliberal policy, the global dominance policy, funding the military-industrial complex, even though they don't need the money. They are even getting more money than what they ask for by billions of dollars. This is a freak show. This is worse than anything that Barnum and Bailey would have offered people a quarter to come in and see something. This is the worst thing I've ever seen. And yet almost all of our members of Congress have been compromised to some degree. And that compromise means that the truth is not going to get out. Not now. How will it get out? When the entire system collapses. When everybody walks away from everything and everybody in the existing system. Walk away from Wikipedia, walk away from the New York Times, walk away from Rachel Maddow, walk away from Sean Hannity, walk away from the pundits, conservative and liberal, walk away from everyone, everything, walk the hell away. Then what comes afterwards, you have some control over, and you can establish common standards of ethics, morals, decency, and forgiveness, and only then are we going to change anything. Otherwise, it's going to collapse. But unfortunately, when it collapses, it's like the great tsunami wave finally collapsing at the beach at 70 feet high. It's going to take a lot of people and environment with them. And that's exactly what we see. Nothing is being done on human rights. Nothing is being done on personal rights. Nothing has been done on environmental rights. Nothing is being done on animal rights. Nothing is being done to change anything. No one's changing anything anywhere at any time. How about that? Now, you have some individuals, but they represent such a tiny, tiny minority. But the vast majority of everybody is choosing to sit quietly with some sense of foreboding or anger and watch what we're seeing now. And it's just brutal to the psyche. So when it collapses, then it'll be a celebration. Until it does, don't celebrate, because you have no idea how bad it's going to get, and it's going to get a lot worse. Remember, anxiety keeps you up, and we don't want you living with anxiety. We want you becoming prepared. That's why every day I'm doing more and more positive input every day this week, positive input. And we'll play part two, part three, part four, clear up through part 10 of what you heard today, Overcoming the Dark Side, for the next 2 weeks to show you there is a different approach, a different door to walk through, a different reality that faces you. Thank you for your calls. Have a nice day, everyone.